Hello, everyone, and welcome to Now Spinning, the official podcast of the Lansing Community College Vinyl Record Club. We meet twice a month to listen to vinyl and talk about music. Stay tuned to learn about how you can get in touch with us and attend our meetings. Hello, everybody. So good to see you. Welcome back to Now Spinning. With me today, I have...
Andy.
Jacob.
And I'm still Simon, I think. Today, we're going to be talking about the music that was played at our Halloween meeting on the 16th of October.
That's as close as we could get to Halloween this year.
No.
It didn't work out, but it was Halloween enough, and I think we all enjoyed it.
It was the music definitely, it's definitely Halloween themed, I'll say that much. Just to start off, though, we have Werewolves of London by Warren Zevon. Great song.
Love this song.
Great artist. I love this. This whole album, I just listened to it sort of recently, and I thought it was really great. He's a really talented songwriter.
Yeah. And appears to have just been a super nice guy in the real world. And yeah, I really like Warren Zevon. This song is just perfect. It's funny. It's got that great riff that's based on some old blues. And yeah, just love the song.
So
great Halloween one too.
With the Chinese menu in his hand. That's the best opening line of any song ever, I think. I don't think he can beat that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It is funny. Like, you know, there's a lot of like folk writing in Warren Zevon's stuff, and that's, I love when folk music is funny.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean? Because it's never like the point, like it's never a comedy act, but it's it really like,
no, it's just good to have a sense of humor.
It makes it so much more fun, which is like, especially in a, like a live setting where like folk really shines. It's
absolutely
like, yeah, let's have some fun.
Great song. Do you want to mention Harry Belafonte coming up next? Jump in line.
Yeah, I didn't play this song. I'm not sure who played this song.
Oh, this might have been Tyler. It's from Beetlejuice.
Oh, that song.
It?
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought, isn't Deo Banana Boat?
Yeah. I think there's two.
Deo.
There's
different songs. Same, yeah.
Is Jump in the Line is not the same as Deo.
I think it is.
I thought there was
really?
A separate. Is it?
No. Maybe I'm unfamiliar.
But it's still
on my record at home, it's called Banana Boat, so I don't know.
Banana Boat?
I don't know. I've also heard it called Deo a lot. But,
interesting.
Yeah. Okay, Beetlejuice. That makes a lot more sense now. I was wondering why.
Is this the one that gets played at the end of the movie?
I think it is.
Okay, so that's not the Banana Boat song.
It's
that's
not
a separate
Banana
song.
Boat, then,
still.
Oh. Give me the banana.
Yeah, it's a famous one.
No, it's not. But yes.
Okay, I do know this song. It's a fun one. I like this one.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Awesome. That was a good play then. Nice.
Yes.
That's cool. Right. Next, we got Minnie the Moocher by Cab Calloway. I think you wanted to say
Cab
something.
Cab Calloway, Minnie the Moocher. First time I came across this thing was from Blues Brothers, watching that. And then when I first saw it, I didn't realize that Cab Calloway was the Cab Calloway from the jazz era. So when I found that out, that like blew my mind that it's the Cab Calloway. But
that
it's
movie
a fun song.
Is stacked.
Yes.
You know, with just all of the talent.
Yes.
I feel a little embarrassed. I've never watched it, but
it's okay.
I'll put it on the list.
Like,
I'll put
it's
it on
a
the
pretty
list.
Good movie.
It's a good one.
It's got some moments, but it's pretty good.
You know, from being like from the 70s, I'd say it actually aged well. It really did.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah.
That's good. That's good. I'll have to check it out, though. It's, you know, John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, all the SNL people. I hear they're all over that, and I mean.
It's got pretty good music. It's pretty funny. It's not that Halloween-y.
No,
that's
this
all
is,
right. That's fine. It doesn't have to all be Halloween songs.
The Halloween costume, maybe. Really? But anyway,
Halloween is cool.
Something a little bit different after that. We have I Wanna Rock by Twisted Sister. And before we talk about this, I want to admit that I had not heard of this song before I saw the SpongeBob movie when I was a little kid. And I thought that was just a song they made up for the movie. Mm. But then I heard this version, and I can never hear this version without thinking of the SpongeBob version.
Yeah.
I'm a goofy goober rock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Oh,
man. So I, unlike you, predate the SpongeBob movie by just a little bit, I remember when the SpongeBob movie came out, man. Oh, it's a masterpiece.
It's a wonderful movie.
But yeah, this song is just an all-time like hair metal, hair rock, you know, it's made to be fun. It's made to play loud and make your parents mad. I love Twisted Sister.
I gotta say, me and Tyler went to Flat Black and Circular like just before the meeting, and I picked up this 45, and I'm dying to play it.
Mm-hmm.
I played it just because I had it.
I recommend, if you do enjoy Twisted Sister, like this song, go listen to this whole album. They're not all as great as this song, but a lot of the like not famous songs are a lot more like serious or like musically serious, and you really get like a lot more of a feel for like what they were trying to do musically. And Some of them really cool. The song Burn in Hell is like one of my all-time favorites, and you never hear it now.
I'll have to check them out too.
I want to step back. We accidentally skipped over Patsy Cline.
Oh, no.
All I want to say is like Patsy Cline is an amazing artist, but in like a modern setting, her voice does sound kind of creepy sometimes. It is a bit of a Halloween one, like the song Crazy, which is like a great song, but it does kind of give you a little bit of a spooky vibe sometimes.
That's good.
That's all I got.
A couple more Halloween songs that are both related to a very famous Halloween song, but it didn't get played. We have the Transylvania Twist and the Monster Mash Party, but not the Monster Mash itself.
No, sorry.
How did that happen?
I played this. It's basically the B-side to the Monster Mash 45. On theory, I played this at the meeting. Monster Mash itself would have been played at the RSO Fair, but the Vinyl Record Club, at the last moment, did not go.
Yeah, it happens.
For whatever reason. It happens, but, you know, it's a weird, weird song.
Yeah.
There's a weird vibe going on.
So part of the other reason we didn't play the Monster Mash is we played the Monster Mash last year.
Yeah.
And we were trying to, like, not just do all the same songs. We did. There's a song coming up that we also played last year, but we were like, yeah, it's fine. Like, we came up with a rule, and then we immediately broke our rule.
It's like a suggestion.
That's totally cool. Yeah, and that's like just your friendly reminder that we say in every meeting, bring whatever you want to the meetings, man. Bring any song you like. If it's not matching the theme, that is totally fine.
Yeah, everything I played at this one, there was like one Halloween song out of it, and I feel a little bit bad about it, but it's whatever.
That's cool. We can't all be the same. People get bored.
I suppose.
I thought it was very fun. We played Transylvania Twist, which is like, you know, whatever happened to my Transylvania Twist? You know, it's like a line in Monster Mash. And so, like, we were like, oh, let's play the song Transylvania Twist. It's all right. I'll tell you, it's not as good as Monster Mash, but it was all right. Like, I was like, yeah, this is the whole album. The Monster Mash album is a really fun, very Halloween-y, like exactly what you expect.
I do think it's also kind of funny that you brought in the 45 and then, Jacob, you brought in the record completely separate from each other.
You got it. I mean, it's Halloween. It's like a no-brainer Halloween one.
Right.
A 45 is a cool one, too.
Actually, I think it was Tyler's 45. Oh.
Well, I think it is funny. Two separate people brought in the same thing, kind of. Halloween's a day for it, I suppose. Following that up, this is something completely not Halloween-related, but something that I brought in and to play two songs off it, and that was the new Geese album, Getting Killed. I will talk about this album at length later, trust me.
Listen, I think we're going to have to add Geese to the bingo card. They're starting to get referenced in every episode.
It's my fault.
We don't have King Giz today. We don't have Weezer today. But you know who we got? Geese.
Geese. Oh,
it's
God.
All right, man. If you want to bring him in every meeting, I'm totally okay with that.
I might do that. But the songs I played were 100 Horses and then the song Taxes, which is like their big breakout song lately. I don't want to talk too much about the music itself right now. We're going to do a spoiler alert. We're going to do a best of 2025 episode at some point. And I went to see them in concert in Detroit a couple of weeks ago with a few friends of the show. And it was, I don't want to, like, maybe it's just because I haven't gone to a lot of concerts, but like it was the greatest concert I've ever been to in my life, I have to say.
Nice.
Their incredible stage presence, great energy. The person who was in charge of the lighting there was going crazy because, like, every song there was just crazy, like, strobe lights and effects and, like, a spotlight behind him the whole time. It was kind of a little annoying because from where I was sitting, there was, like, a spotlight right behind the lead singer, and every time he moved, I would just get blinded, but it was worth it to see Geese. Great, great band. Probably my favorite band that's currently active. I would almost dare to say they're, like, the best band currently active, but I only say that because I saw them live, I guess. Great album, Getting Killed. Getting Killed by Geese, awesome album title. You'll hear more about this later.
Nice.
Stay tuned. Anyway, that's the Geese speech. Coming up next, we have Dave Brubeck Quartet, a little bit of a vibe shift.
Yeah.
So Dave Brubeck is the mastermind behind Take Five. This is not the album that Take Five is from, but the dude is a genius.
I will agree with you. I did like that album a lot.
We've talked about Dave Brubeck before on the podcast and my bizarre history with them. But yeah, I love Dave Brubeck, an amazing jazz musician. The whole Brubeck like family just all makes amazing music.
I actually have the Time Out album. It has Take Five on it.
Nice.
The entire album is just weird time measures.
Mm-hmm.
but it's awesome. Mm-hmm.
I do love that album.
And it all still works. That's it why. Does. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, there's a lot of the jazz stuff that like gets fancy for the sake of being fancy, but doesn't actually sound that good. This is one where like gets fancy and sounds amazing.
Yeah. Wait, is he the piano player in that band? Is he?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. No, he's great then. Oh, yeah. Good.
Pretty famous for being piano.
Okay. I'm not a jazz person. That's my bad for not knowing that. But yeah.
No, that's all right. That's all right.
He's quite good at the piano. I'll say that. He's quite good at the piano. Mm-hmm. Rolling along past that one real quick. I want to mention Cauldron by 50 Foot Hose. This was like a weird experimental like noise track almost from the late 60s. My only thought is that they were just letting anybody put anything on a record then.
Mm. I'm sure they paid for studio time.
Definitely. I mean,
that's what's hilarious is somebody said, yeah, I'm going to pay to record this song. And I'm so glad they did.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much more like artistic expression to be found in that experimental place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's cool.
And like, I just wanted to mention also that, especially from 1967, or 1968, whenever this was from, it's very impressive. You have to think about like just, it may sound like random noise and stuff, but all of that was definitely, they had to go and like do that all analog deliberately, very early synthesizer stuff. It's fascinating. Right.
They had to put all of that to tape.
Exactly.
And like rewind it manually and figure all that out. Like there was no digital, we have 80 takes and we can put this and move it around all we want. You know what I mean? They were probably working with like maybe 8 tracks, maybe even 4. They could have been using a 4-track
those
like tape
exist?
Setup.
Yeah, 4 tracks. Yeah, that was back in the 60s. That was like the standard.
Yeah.
Well, that just proves a hole there. I have never heard of 4 tracks.
Yeah. No. Oh, so I'm not talking about 8 tracks.
Oh.
I'm not talking about the like format, the music format. I'm talking about literally they would have a tape recording their music and it would have 8 available tracks on it. So you could only have 8 different like sounds happening at the same time. And that would have been like a really nice, really expensive setup. 4 was actually more common.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would have to do stuff where they would record all these 4 tracks onto the same piece of tape. And if they wanted to add more, they would have to master that tape out and then like add it on another set of 4-track tape. And it's like a whole thing. I have no idea why 8 tracks, like the music format, are called that. That's not a format I know a lot about. But yeah, old recording setup stuff in the early days of tape. They did not have a lot of opportunities to layer different parts on top of each other. And that's where, like, yeah, that song, they very much intended all of that to be on there, probably. And that's what makes it so wild. It's like, oh, they really planned this out, and it still just sounds so wild. But cool stuff.
Yeah, not much else like it. Now for something that maybe has some stuff that is like it, Thriller by Michael Jackson. We got this one in here. You said earlier there was something that got played last time. It's Thriller.
This was played last year, again, by me. Also this year by me.
That's
but
all right.
It's Thriller, the ultimate Halloween song.
You know what's wild? Exactly. I'm pretty sure 3 years ago I played it.
Somebody's always played.
I think we've successfully played Thriller every single Halloween.
It's a tradition.
So that's a good, you know, it's a good one. It's a lot of fun, you know. You can have your opinions on Michael Jackson, but there's no denying that's a really fun Halloween song.
I think, yeah, I'm thinking about it now. I cannot remember a time when someone didn't bring Thriller in for Halloween. I feel like at some point we probably played it like 2 times in a meeting or something. I wouldn't be surprised if I have to dig back in the archive and find that. But
yeah, great
fun
song.
Times.
Love Vincent Price on that. Love the whole vibe. It's a ton of fun. Music video is brilliant too.
Yeah. Fun times with Michael Jackson. Moving along, I'm sorry I ruined the Halloween vibe for a minute by playing Mannequin by Wire. That's my bad. I should have known better. Great song. Great album. This one, I think it's one of my very favorite like punk, not like new wave, but like it's like proto new wave, I guess is the word for it, because it's a lot poppier than a lot of like punk stuff from that era.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Next, we got Mr. Crowley by Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Rip Ozzy.
Rip Ozzy.
Put the obligatory in there. This song is arguably the best Ozzy Osbourne song. Maybe not the most
Crazy
fun.
Train?
But so as a like piece of music, Mr. Crowley is so much more complicated. Crazy Train is like an amazing song, obviously.
Right.
Everybody loves that song. But Mr. Crowley is Ozzy really saying, no, guys, I can write complex music.
Okay, artistry behind it is way more complex.
Oh, yeah.
That
one, yes.
That whole intro is incredible. That's my favorite part of the whole, like, the whole album, I'd have to say. Like, I just listened to this, and again, I'm embarrassing myself. I hadn't listened to Blizzard of Oz until, like, the day after he died, because I was like, I feel like I gotta get into it.
Listen, man, you are more than allowed to skip Ozzy Osbourne.
Okay.
I've said before, like, I don't have a huge opinion of Ozzy Osbourne as a musician. He's one of my favorites in many ways, but, like, as a singer, he's not... doesn't have a great voice, but, like, he tries really hard, and it works really well for that style of music, you know what I mean? And, like, especially the early Black Sabbath and stuff, it really, really worked because people weren't really singing hard rock songs like that at the time.
No, yeah.
And it really kind of pushed, like, okay, this is how hard rock and eventually metal and stuff are kind of going to sound and work.
Yeah, it was innovative. That's what it was.
Is he the first person to have a weird voice when singing rock and roll?
Oh, certainly not. Certainly not. No. There's a lot. Listen, man, you want to go find some weird metal from the 50s? I promise you it exists.
But you dig deep enough.
He really put very, like, all of his power behind it. And it's like, he didn't have a very powerful voice. So you get this, like, real, like, pushed feeling, I feel like, to his vocal performances that isn't, like, shouty, you know what I mean? He is still singing, but it's very, like, forced, and it's very pushed, and I find that very interesting, and you can really hear it in a lot of, like, modern metal and hard rock that came, you know, not long after Black Sabbath and Ozzy Osbourne and stuff. And that's, like, when you get to stuff like Crazy Train, he's not belting it quite as hard, probably because he, like, learned how to sing better. And I would argue that, like, the Crazy Train singing is some of his best in the way he's styling it. Like, again, he was never going to be Frank Sinatra.
No.
But, like, he really captured the vibes.
Yeah, he did.
And I liked it a lot about him. We actually played a Black Sabbath song. Somebody
yes, we did. You speaking of early Black Sabbath, I played The Wizard, which what I've looked up, this is, like, one of Ozzy's, like, very rare, like, instrumental contributions to a Black Sabbath song. Like, I think he played synthesizers on a, like, it was like Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, one of those songs on that album. But this one is probably his most prominent. He's playing the harmonica solo at the beginning. And I think it's hilarious because if you look up, like, live videos of them playing The Wizard, like, Ozzy plays the harmonica for them and he's, like, terrified to play it. He's like,
oh no.
Like, you know, it's so funny because, like, he's normal expression. He's, like, dancing around on stage and stuff. But he's, like, staring, like, blank into the camera, like, playing the harmonica. He's so locked in on it. It's so funny to me. But I like this song a lot. It's, like, a fun.
Yeah.
It's not really a creepy song. Like, it's like The Wizard. They're just talking about how he's just a cool guy who goes around and, like, spreads his wisdom. There's actually quite a few, surprisingly, like, prog rock early metal songs that are about wizards for some reason. Like, there's another one I used to own that was called, it was like a Uriah Heep, that band. They have an album called Demons and Wizards, and there's just multiple songs about it. And I think that's just a fun thread through, like, early, like, hard rock, heavy metal, like, the fantasy stuff. I've noticed that's pretty popular.
That's because, like, Lord of the Rings had come out not that much longer before that, and they all actually, like, read it when they were kids, when it was, like, a new thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is wild to think about.
Like, Led Zeppelin, too, as well.
Yeah,
there's a couple.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Lord of the Rings reference on...
so much Lord of the Rings and Led Zeppelin, and it's just, like... Well, you know, nowadays we think of Lord of the Rings as, like, a very nerd, you know, focused cultural thing. Well, and it's like, and not that, you know, that's separate from musicianship, but, you know, you think of, like, Led Zeppelin, whose image was always, like, the coolest of the cool, but, like, they had some really nerdy stuff in their songs. Yeah, I love it.
Fun stuff. Great song. Fun album. Black Sabbath, self-titled. Black Sabbath by Black Sabbath off the album Black Sabbath. I didn't play that one. I was thinking about playing that one, but
that's all right.
That got played last Halloween, I think. Moving along to a couple more Halloween songs here. We had a Louis Armstrong song. What's this one?
Jeepers Creepers.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say about this one?
Actually, I do not.
It's just Halloween-y, right?
It's Halloween.
Oh,
it's Halloween.
Here's the thing. Louis Armstrong, obviously one of the greatest jazz musicians of all time. Amazing voice, amazing trumpet player. Just amazing, amazing. He has so much serious work that is not known almost at all. And weirdly, a lot of his, like, really corny, really basic stuff, like What a Wonderful World, and, like, I love that song, but that song is so corny. It's barely even jazz, you know what I mean? It's basically just like a contemporary vocal performance from the time, less than it is jazz.
Right.
But yeah, that's totally fine, because, like,
the vibe from that song is such amazing.
So wonderful.
Oh, it's so nice. And the vibes of Jeepers Creepers is really effective. Like, it does what it wants. It's, like, kind of creepy, you know, while still being fun. And that's, I love that, like, Yeah, Louis Armstrong. I hope that people find the corny Louis Armstrong songs and it helps them find the serious stuff, because it's all brilliant. And that's like, I love Louis Armstrong. That was like, when I was a little kid, one of the first jazz artists that I like knew and recognized.
Oh, he's great to break into jazz with.
Yeah, oh yeah.
He is the standard for most of jazz.
I'll have to check him out. Again, I gotta check him out and put him on the list.
Oh, you're good. You're good, man.
Oh, man. Rolling on, did you want to talk about the Jerry Orly or
Jerry Only? Yeah, Jerry Only. So at the last few Halloweens, the other thing that I've focused on playing is the Misfits. The Misfits were a early punk band that really focused on horror and shock rock elements. A lot of their songs referenced B-movie, horror films, that kind of thing. I love them, and I was having a hard time deciding what to play this year, because I didn't want to do repeats. So instead, I brought in Jerry Only's solo album. So Jerry Only is the original bassist of the Misfits. They formed in like the late 70s, something around then. He's been one of the most consistent members of that band. This album, which was released in 2022, first solo album of his entire career, which is hilarious. And you listen to it and it's like, well, he's just writing Misfits songs. Like, you might as well have just kept making Misfits, but like, he got his name on this. It's brilliant. This whole album is all very Halloweeny, very spooky. There's other punk songs on there that aren't, but as a whole, it's very spooky sounding. And I really like it. And this is like, I mean, the guy's got to be 60-some, pushing his 70s probably. I don't know. And he, you know, is releasing punk albums. And you're like, dude, that's I hope I'm doing that when I'm that old. You know, right. That's awesome. Love him. Love Jerry Only. Love
that's
the Misfits.
Right. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Rolling on. This is another, not a Halloween song, really, but I just wanted to talk about it real quick. We had Black Satin by Miles Davis off the album On the Corner. This is all of Miles Davis's like fusion era. Like, this is my favorite, some of my favorite music ever. But this one, I just happened to listen to this after this meeting, because it wasn't really on my radar specifically until I heard this song. And this is like incredible stuff. This whole album, it's basically like the purest distillation of like funk and jazz into like one album. Like, it's, I can't even describe it to you. He put his trumpet through like a wah pedal. Like, that's strange, like, sounds that they're making on this record. I have to say that again, like you said earlier, like dialing, bringing it back to the cauldron thing, all of this stuff was very deliberate, like that he was seeking out, you know, sounds that weren't in music already, and he just to make him with you know, like I said, running a trumpet through a wah pedal, the other crazy stuff like that. It's just an incredible album, pure energy. I can't really do it justice by talking about it here. Cool. So I would say go check it out.
Miles Davis was from the late jazz era where they started experimenting stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's like, the bebop was coming out here. Music was flying all over the place. Motown, not soon after Miles Davis left the scene, was starting to pick up. Rock and roll kind of left the jazz scene. So, yeah.
Miles Davis is at the center of like pretty much all like the big jazz like events in like the 50s or the 60s. Like, you know, like cool jazz, like hard bop, and then like modal jazz, and then jazz fusion. Like, he's right there at the front line of all of that, pushing it forward. It's always crazy.
If you want jazz for your background music, you have to go with Miles Davis, because he's just a mood setter.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm going to sneak one more in before we end here. Tyler played the Great Pumpkin Waltz at the meeting from Charlie Brown. If you've never listened to the Vince Guaraldi Trio stuff that isn't just the Charlie Brown music, it's great. It's great, like smooth jazz kind of stuff. Just go listen to it. That's all I got
to
say.
If you do one thing, listen to one thing from this episode.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, Vince Guaraldi. Sure, I could live with that.
Vince Guaraldi, yeah. I think that does wrap it up for today. Thank you all for tuning in. We had quite an interesting playlist this time, and we hope to see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.